I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Now it's time for our weekly visit to the barber shop. We know it's Thursday, but in advance of the holiday, we thought this would be a good time to get together, get a little shape up right before the holiday. The guys talk about what's in the news and what's on their mind. So sitting in the chairs this week are writer Jimmy Israel with us from Cleveland. Arsalan Iftikhar, founder of themuslimguide.com, is with us from Chicago. Healthcare consultant, a contributor to National Review Online, Neil Minkoff, is with us from Boston. And right here in Washington, D.C., Corey Day, contributing editor for The Root. Take it away, Jimmy.
Thanks, Michelle. Hey, fellas. Hey, welcome to the show. How we doing?
What's up?
Happening, man? What's cracking?
Just living it.
Come on. Get happy. It's barbecue in your future and your immediate future. Happy early Independence Day.
Yes, indeed. Well,
America.
America, indeed. Since the U.S. is out of the World Cup, let's bring things home right to Cleveland. As it turns out, somebody...
All roads lead to Cleveland. Mm-hmm. All politics.
I mean,
go ahead,
I mean,
Jimmy.
Right?
Go ahead.
They
do
don't.
Your thing. Have your moment.
They don't? Okay, well, Kyrie Irving is not the only guy excited about the $19 million deal with the Cleveland Cavaliers. Corey Dade, CD. You think he's worth the money? Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's definitely worth the money. He is probably the best young point guard in the Eastern Conference. All due respect to John Wall. The best point guards in the West, so he has no competition there. But, you know, he had another year left on his contract, so he had nowhere to go. He had no deals to make. His issue is staying healthy. And now that they just drafted Andrew Wiggins out of University of Kansas, that could be a dynamic duo. So he has every incentive to stay put for now.
Well, that is a big issue, though, CD, staying healthy.
I don't
play ball, and my hand hurts, and my knee is going out. But of course, I do box, so there's that. Dr. Neil, LeBron James reportedly wants a short-term contract of $22 million. Will he get it from the Heat, and should Chris Bosh and Dwayne Wade take pay cuts to make it happen?
Oh, you're going to make me say nice things about LeBron.
Yes. Do it.
Go out of your comfort zone, man.
He's worth way more than that. It shows actually tremendous. I can't believe I have to say these things. It shows a real championship spirit amongst the others that they would take a pay cut to facilitate having the best player in the world continue to lead them to championships. He is worth a tremendous amount more than that for that team. You know, what they do have is they have Pat Riley by the short hairs because, you know, theoretically, according to the news reports, they all have structured deals in places that haven't been signed and a list of free agents that he's expected to go get. But if he doesn't produce, he doesn't necessarily get the big three back. They have all the leverage there, and he's worth more than that. He is.
Wow.
Well, it also shows the benefits of working together. I mean, it was reported. Do you remember that the sitcom Friends? Well, it was reported that one of the reasons that these guys were able to be as well compensated as they were is that they all worked together in concert, that they were all willing to discuss and all work together as a team. And they were able to negotiate their deal as a team, which is one of the reasons they were able to.
Yeah.
So I think that's one of the interesting developments here is that these three guys are, if reports are correct, working as a team. I don't know, Arsalan, what do you think? Go ahead.
Anyway. Yeah, well, I mean, you know, here you had, you know, essentially three mercenaries who are willing to opt out of their contracts, take a lower pay to try and bring a fourth potential mercenary, maybe a Pau Gasol from the Los Angeles Lakers initially thought, maybe point guard Kyle Lowry, but he ended up re-signing with Toronto. What I found interesting about this whole free agent sweepstakes was Carmelo Anthony recently went to Texas. He went to both Dallas and Houston, you know, to see what they had to offer. And what was really interesting is when he went to Houston, outside the Toyota Center, they had a huge picture of Carmelo Anthony in a Houston Rockets number 7 jersey. But the problem is that the number 7 jersey of the Houston Rockets currently belongs to Jeremy Lin. And so it was kind of a slap in the face to Jeremy Lin, you know, to have this huge poster of Melo outside basically saying that, you know, your days here are numbered. And so it's going to be really interesting to see how NBA free agency ultimately pans out.
Well,
That was wrong. That was not. But what are you going to do?
I mean, it's tough.
It's like the trailer rule in Hollywood, right? You know how big is your trailer and how close is it to the set.
Jeremy Lin needs to put on his big boy pants. He knows what time it is. He knew he wasn't going to last beyond this season with that team. They were going to deal him anyway.
Yeah, but you put some other number on there, dude. You don't put your guy's number up there with a new man. With a guy who hasn't even signed.
It's a business. It's a business. They have no loyalty to these players, especially a Jeremy Lin.
I know. Like, why did you call the players mercenaries? How about strong strategic thinkers? I mean, what's up with that? Like, why are they mercenaries when, you know what I mean? What? Why are
we've had this discussion before, Michelle. You and I are not going to agree.
Okay, all right.
All right. From sports.
That was very mature of you, Arslan. Thank you for
can we move from sports to music, please? Because clearly haters are going to hate. But we got to give props to Robin Thicke for laying it on kind of Thicke, I guess. The singer's new album is titled Paula. He's trying to get his woman back. Can we drop the clip, please? Wow. He's caught a lot of flack, and also it's drawn in like an imperfect analog to Marvin Gaye's Here, My Dear, which was actually part of the divorce settlement he made. He was just like saying, Here, My Dear, takes it. This is your album. But anyway, so this is a different thing, but I'm going to stick up for my boy Thicke, man. I mean, I say, you know, the romantic is dead, and I think it's really kind of sick that we know we punish men for being too masculine, then we punish them for being too romantic. And I feel like Robin's catching a lot of flack for trying to get Paula Patton back. I mean, I didn't mean for that to rhyme, but hey, it just happens all the time. Corey Day, you're not so optimistic, are you?
Yeah, I think I just threw up a little bit in my mouth. I give props to any man who's willing to show, you know, his sensitivities and is willing to do whatever he can to get his woman back. Word. But, you know, let's not go too far. I mean, here's a line from one of his songs called the song Lock the Door. At least open the doggy door, throw a friend a juicy bone. That is the extent of his romantic, you know, expertise here. If that's what he's dealing with, you know what? He can kiss that goodbye. I mean, I think there's a difference between.
Is it that it's lame, or is it that the lyrics are lame and simplistic, or is it that the total picture, like his behavior at the Music Awards with that dance with Miley Cyrus, which took place in front of her, that a lot of people thought was just a bit much? I mean, what is it, the total picture? Is it the album itself is lame in your view?
Well,
because begging has a very long history in R&B, okay? Yeah, like, I don't think there would be an R&B without begging.
Yeah, but, I mean, the please, please, baby, baby, please. I mean, that's part of the DNA of R&B.
Yeah.
So that's all good. But when you are begging in a way that, you know, goes to this level, first of all, the lyrics are lame. I mean, he is the creepy crooner at this point. To me,
Oh, come on.
Yeah, there's the analogy. Okay, there's the analogy of him. You know, it's like on Facebook when you're posting things to get public sympathy. It seems like the public display is about his narcissism in promoting an album more than a sincere effort to actually go after his wife. Why don't you talk to her directly?
You know what this is? You know what this is, CD? I don't mean to cut you off, but he's trying to live that very sincere, that very serious R&B singer life. And on some level, he's being punished for trying to front like he's a black R&B singer, when in fact he's just kind of a white guy that sings black. You know, he's trying to live all that life, because really what black R&B singers do best, from Sam Cooke to Barry White to R. Kelly, they beg for the women back. That's what they do best.
But you know what? I go to Daryl Hall and John Oates. I go to Simply Red. Oh. They're all kinds of quote-unquote blue-eyed soul singers who actually do it authentically. And I think what's missing here is the authenticity that comes across to the audience. There's nothing that seems sincere about this album. He said he put this album together in 2 weeks, and it shows.
Neil, what do you think?
So, this is going to sound like a cop-out, but I had never heard of Robin Thicke before Blurred Lines. I didn't expect to hear much from him again. I think it says something so bizarre about our celebrity-laced society that we're having a conversation about this not particularly, you know, this somewhat obscure singer's divorce and whether or not he's oversharing. I personally think it's creepy. I personally think there, from what I've read, there's way too much personal detail that his wife probably wouldn't want released than the average American to know about. But I think it says more about who we are as a society that we even care.
Interesting point. Go ahead. Arslan, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I co-sign everything that Neil and Corey just said. I mean, I think it's, you know, if the question is it romantic or is it lame? It's both. It's romantically lame. I think that what's interesting, you know, I think he took it too far. He had a Twitter hashtag called AskThick, where the public just, you know, essentially, you know, lambasted him for this whole, you know, experiment. And I think that, you know, if you're going to get your woman back, that's, you know, that is to be commended. I have no problem with that. But again, like Corey said, to sort of do it in this manner was a romantically lame way of doing it.
If you're just joining us, we're having our weekly barbershop roundtable with writer Jimmy Israel, Professor Arsalan Iftikhar, journalist Corey Dade, healthcare consultant Neil Minkoff. So let me ask you all about something that's, you know, Neil, you pointed out the fact that sometimes the kind of the urgent drives out the important, the celebrity drives out the important. I know that you were very interested in a topic we discussed earlier in the program today. That we talked a lot about the. It's been a very important topic, the killing of the three Israeli teenagers, and a lot has happened as a consequence of it. There is a suspected revenge killing. There have been, you know, military strikes. There have been, you know, airstrikes in Gaza. There have been, you know, Palestinians killed in rock-throwing incidents with the police who were searching for these boys. And I just wondered, if I could just ask you what you make of this. I mean, Arsalan, do you part of your career has been kind of trying to address these issues and address them in a human way. Do you have some response to this that you'd wanted to share?
Yeah, you know, Michelle, it was interesting. Earlier last week, I was at the Aspen Ideas Festival, and I got a chance to actually sit down with former Israeli ambassador Michael Oren. We were at a picnic table together for about an hour when the news of these three teenagers was starting to break. And Ambassador Oren and I, you know, were just talking to each other about how important it was to humanize the other to each other. You know, when Israelis die, we tend to see, you know, Israelis stand up and mourn for them. When Palestinians die, we see the same on that side. And I think it's important for us to acknowledge the humanity in one another and you know, call out the tragedy when three, you know, young Israeli teenagers are murdered, or when a Palestinian teenager is murdered in retaliation. I think we need to, you know, sort of look beyond our own comfort zones and bring the humanity out in one another. And that's something that, you know, sadly has been a part of this whole violence, beginning violence in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict.
Neil, what about you? Does this kind of hit home for you in some way?
Yeah, of course it does. I mean, as an American Jew and as a parent, it hits home. I mean, to me, it's so convoluted. Do the military strikes come after the rockets are fired, or the rockets come after the military strikes? And is right. the kidnapping and killing a result, a reaction to a military strike, or is that a reaction to a rocket being fired? But even before we can get to an idea of two people sitting down and talking about peace, we almost need like this cooling off period. Like, can we just have a month where nothing bad happens so that we can just hit the reset button and not every action is a result of is a reaction to something that's already occurred? We need this cooling off period to prevent another military strike or another intifada and be able to have a period where there is a true reset button so that everything can start fresh again.
Corey, can I just ask you this? Because I know that one of your portfolios is covering politics. You know, we saw a recent poll from a credible organization showed that 33% of American voters think Obama is the worst president since World War II. And I just have to ask whether part of not this, but other kind of chaos in other parts of the world or these very troubling situations is part of what's contributing to that, and whether you feel that he's exerted leadership on this issue appropriately.
I don't think there's any statistical significance in the polls to tie sort of his poll, you know, plummeting to his foreign policy. I think what you see is Americans are tired of sort of U.S. engagement in Iraq and Afghanistan. They generally, and polls show this too, they generally want the U.S. to pull back from these engagements, and they're war weary. And then the other big thing is when it comes to American politics and how voters think, voters are very hardly ever influenced significantly by foreign policy. And so, especially in an off election year, it's just not they're two separate and distinct things.
Interesting. Well, let's end on a high note, though. As you mentioned, we're having the barbershop on Thursday because we figure you might want to make an early exit for the weekend. We do have a program tomorrow, but we're going to let you guys get your barbecue on early. So, what are you guys doing for the holiday? Anybody want to let me know? What are you doing, Corey?
I am going to the birthplace of I guess we call it the birthplace of America, where the Declaration of Independence was signed. Where else to go than that to celebrate America's independence? Going to Philly, take my daughter up there.
Awesome.
Really, it's just an excuse to see my favorite band, The Roots, kick it for free.
Well, I think your daughter will enjoy that time with you. Neil, I understand you have a yearly tradition.
Yes, we do the same three things every year, and they're hokey, and you guys can make fun of me if you want. We read the Declaration of Independence together as a family. We tell the story about Hancock and Adams passing away 50 years later on the 4th of July, and we go to our little small-town parade and watch the floats go by and watch the Revolutionary War reenactors fire off their muskets.
Very, very, very nice. I think it was Jefferson, wasn't it? Jefferson and Adams on the same
day? Isn't that what I said?
You said Hancock, John Hancock.
Oh, sorry.
Thomas
Jefferson. I meant Jefferson.
Okay. All right. Well, you'll rehearse that before you read the Declaration of Independence. I know you will. Arsalan, our friend, it's Ramadan. So
it is.
The barbecue's going to have to happen late, right?
Yeah. So the 7 million American Muslims, we're going to have to wait for our halal hamburgers until sunset on this 4th of July.
Okay. But you're going to have one, though, right?
Absolutely.
All right. Jimmy, what about you?
Michelle, I'm going to try to get through it like I try to get through every day. It's going to be Hot Sauce Williams for one. That's it. That's my life.
Oh.
Sorry.
But we'll throw some extra.
Jimmy, come visit. Come to the parade with
Him. Help him read the Declaration of Independence.
Yeah, Jimmy.
Get the names right. You know.
Uh-huh.
He's a writer. I mean, you know, he's the editor. He cares about stuff like that. Oh, well.
Here we go.
I hope everybody has a happy and safe 4th. Jimmy Israel.
And the same to you.
Oh, thank you. Jimmy Israel is a writer. You can find his blog at jimmyisrael.com. Neil Minkoff is a healthcare consultant and contributor to National Review Online. Corey Dade is a contributing editor for The Root. And Arsalan Iftikhar is founder of TheMuslimGuide.com and an adjunct professor of religious studies at DePaul University. Thank you all so much.
America.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
And remember, if you can't get enough Barbershop Buzz on the radio, look for our Barbershop podcast that's in the iTunes store or at npr.org. That's our program for today. I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News and the African American Public Radio Consortium. Happy Independence Day, everybody.